Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden.
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hello, Colorado. This is Hope Shuttleman, your former vice chairwoman of the Colorado GOP, and I am the guest host here on Chuck and Julie. Truth straight up. Chuck and Julie will be back on Monday. Today, we are cutting right through the noise and exposing the truth. Democrats truly steamrolled the last 120-day session with their radical agendas. But to actually bring all the information and the truth forward, we have our guest speakers today. We have Representative Scott Bottoms. Thank you so much for being here today. And we have Representative, actually Senate, Mark Baisley, Senator Mark Baisley. And then we will have a couple of individuals on the phone here shortly. Welcome, you guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Hey, how are you guys?
I'm good.
Very well now that session is over.
I could only imagine. And we will be having Representative Stephanie Luck coming through on the phones here, and then we will get her on board. So let's just kind of cut straight to it. I know that some of our viewers obviously know you all. So if you would just kindly introduce yourselves, we'll start with Representative Scott Bottoms, and then we'll go to Senator Mark Baisley.
Yeah, again, thank you for having me on the show. This has been a crazy year. This is my third year as a representative. I'm representative out of El Paso County, east side of Colorado Springs, and I just started my second term, this third year in the House.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you so much for serving. Senator Mark Baisley, if you would kindly introduce yourself to our listeners.
Thank you, Hope. Good to see you, and it's an honor to serve with Representative Bottoms. I served for 4 years in the House and representing at that time most of Douglas County and all of Teller County. And now I'm in my third year in the state Senate and representing those two counties plus five more. So I go from my district goes from Franktown in Douglas County to Leadville in Lake County and from Ken Carroll Valley up in Jefferson County all the way down to Westcliff in Custer County. So I get the Arkansas River Valley, and so that's my district. And yeah, I come from a technology background. I live in Colorado because what is now Lockheed Martin moved me out here 36 years ago, now that I think about it.
Wow. And thank you so much for serving as well. I know that that's got to be a lot for both of you guys to be gone from your families so much, you know, 120 days. That's got to be a lot. And I just got to notice that Stephanie Luck is on the phone. Is that still correct, Thomas?
Yeah.
Hey, Stephanie. If you would kindly go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners. I know that a lot of our listeners already know you.
Sure. So I'm Stephanie Luck. I serve House District 60. This is the end of my fifth year in office, and my district encompasses much of Senator Baisley. So he is my senator, and it encompasses 3 months. Custer, Teller counties in full, and then portions of Chafee and Pueblo County.
Well, thank you so much for being with us via phone, and thank you so much for serving yourself. So I guess let's just get this story started. I have a couple of questions that I would love to have you guys answer, and then just, you know, more just having conversation about what the session looked like for you guys. So my main question is, How will the policies that have passed this session impact everyday Coloradans in taxes, freedom, school, energy, and property rights? So, whoever wants to start on that, I think let's just get started with this conversation.
We should let the senator go first.
Oh, goodness. Well, here's the thing that I realized probably 5 years ago, which I should have realized 7 years ago, but the worldview that comes in from the left, the Democrats' worldview, it's a collectivist worldview for one. So this is why we get the radical bills past that we do. And I was sitting there one day and wondering, how do we get such radical stuff? Because I'm thinking about my friends across the aisle and going, these are people that I would and had gone to a football game with, and I could socialize with most of them and certainly get along with them. But there were a few, and I counted up back at the time about 5% of them that I considered to be truly radical. And but then what I'm thinking, how does that group put through such radical stuff? And what occurred to me was, well, most of them did not put in the radical things, but those that did put in a radical, they all voted for it. And since they were in the majority, then those radical ideas made it through the process and all the way up to the governor, who's himself a collectivist along with them. And so they just march walk lockstep together. And they don't see this as the utilitarian view that the founders intended for us to have as government. Government has a purpose according to our founding document of securing the people's rights that are endowed to us by the Creator. But they see it as their church, and it's so the state has become the church for the left. So when they will implement things beyond let's fund the paving of the roads, they will advance belief systems, and so in much of what I'm sure we'll talk about today, especially when it comes to the trans things and all the many sexual oriented things that they're obsessed with, it's a belief system, and they advance those beliefs through their church, and their church has the force of government behind it. So, they struggle with things like acceptance, and but this way, instead of trying to persuade people through a church to accept their lifestyle, they have a church that has the force of government behind it. And so that was kind of like the realization I had 5 years ago, but also we just see that played out so much. And I said so from the well this year. I said, you guys have turned this place into your church, but and I didn't get any pushback from them. I think they just scratched their head and thought, maybe he's right. I don't know, but that's the tenor of it. So let me just lay that down as an initial marker and pause for my brilliant colleagues to participate as well.
Thank you so much, Senator Scott. Let's go ahead and get your opinion on all of this.
Yeah, I believe that Senator Baisley has this very accurate. This is what is coming out of the House right now is no longer, taxes and potholes, as he said. This has become ideology, and this has become directional, extreme intentional directional ideology. And the ideology truly is that there's going to be a control. There's going to be an intentional control over the state. Governor Polis said 3 years in a row now in the state of the state that nobody needs to own private property, that we all need to live near bus stations and train stations, and then the state will take care of everything. And that is the mindset. If you go back into Polis's history with the blueprint and everything else, this is his direction. And he is, I mean, he always kind of likes to pretend like he's a libertarian or middle of the road. He's not. He's extremely, extremely progressive, liberal, socialist. And so then what happens is we've elected a lot of very strong socialist, even Marxist Democrats into the House. And by the way, as a side note to that, I don't believe that the average Democrat across the United States believes what these people in the House and the Senate are doing. They don't believe in taking children's rights away. And so your question was, how does this play out, right? What's happening? Well, the worst transgender control bill I've seen, and every year I think it can't get any worse than this, and it does. They're now going to take your children away if you don't immediately adhere to a transgender ideology. Well, that's not people being equal. That's not equity and those kind of things that they say. This isn't about the people. That is a strong arm control mechanism that says you will do what we say, you will say what we tell you to say, you will act according to our ideologies, and you will embrace them 100%, or we will be continue to make this worse and worse. And this year they made it worse by saying, now we're going to take your children away. You've been doing all this other stuff. We're taking your guns away, we're taking your rights away, taking parental rights away, all this other stuff. Now we're going to take your children. And the thing is this is the bridge too far for the state. People all across the state, all kinds of groups that are normally at odds with each other on opposite sides of the aisle, everyone is coming together and saying, no, you're not going to take our children away. We're tired of this. Stop it now. And so these things are immediately going into lawsuits. We know that the anti-two amendment bills are going into lawsuits, but 1312, the one that's going to take your children, this is going to be fought in the courts. And regardless of how it comes out in the courts, people are not going to let the state take their children away. They're not. And so this is where it plays out 3 months, 6 months. When we start session next year, you're going to see a very different Colorado. You're going to see a Colorado that has they're already saying this. They've had enough. They're going to stand up. They're going to push back. And you've got church groups, Christian groups that have never really taken a stand that are now taking a stand on. You've got entire demographics. The Hispanic community is tired of this. They're standing up to this. You've even got a lot of the gays against groomers and those groups that are standing up. You've got parental groups. And I believe by the time we start session next year, this will have been the voice of the people saying to the legislature, you better stop this. And they will be coming for us in lawsuits and in attitude and everything else. And
Oh,
it's
I
going to be
agree with
further
you.
out.
Yeah, and I agree with you. We've seen it throughout. It literally just played out throughout not only the nation but internationally. And Miss Luck, I'd like to go ahead and get your opinion on this as well. How are your feelings with this? And where do you, as a representative, how is this impacting you? And I'd like to just get your opinion.
And so, for further context, the legislature considered over 650 bills in the last 120 days. We are yet to know how many of those have fully passed through the system because some are still on the governor's desk. So I'll hold off on those numbers. But 650 new laws, it's a little bit less than we've seen in the recent past in terms of what's been. That is the budgetary crisis that Colorado has been facing, and the fact that what is required in order to advance the worldview that Senator Baisley was pointing to is money, taxes. Taxes are tithes in this religion. And when you don't have enough money to do the things you want to do, two things happen. One, you look for other sources of money, and we saw that quite a bit this year. Where it was as if the legislators were going through the couch cushions of the state and trying to find as much change as they could to do the things they wanted to do. And so that resulted in cash funds that have sat unused for years being swept back into the general fund. It also resulted in the legislators seeking to use what we call the unclaimed property trust fund. So your listeners might want to go and search Unclaimed Property Trust Fund Colorado. I don't remember, maybe the gentleman on the call remember the exact money wise, or I don't know what the URL is, but you can go on and you can look and see if the state has in its custody, money belonging to you. This is from things like when you move, your utility company might have some sort of rebate or return for you, and they can't get a hold of you. So it goes into the state coffers, and the state holds it in trust so that you can claim your property at any given time. Some folks have hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. Businesses are listed there, and it just sits. It sits in these accounts, and it generates interest. And so our colleagues have said, hey, this is unused capital. We can leverage this in order to do the things we can't afford to do because our economy is not strong enough, and because of the TABOR limitations and just different things that are at play, it will enable us to do what we want to do. And so they're raiding all of these funds, many of which they shouldn't be raiding. They're leveraging in ways that I don't believe they should be leveraging in order to squeeze out every dollar to do what they want done. But what's curious about all of this, Hope, is there are a number of bills this year that pointed to the fact that our executive agencies are not actually fulfilling their jobs because we're, so for instance, there was a bill and the current statute said that the state government had to do X. Well, they haven't been doing X for who knows how long. And so the legislature just passed a bill to say, okay, well, you could do either X or you could do Y, because they've already been doing Y, meaning our state agencies aren't doing what we have delegated them to do at all. And there are some instances of that this year, or they're doing it the way they want to do it, regardless of what the law says. And so it's very curious, the whole picture, because we're funding programs that nobody is taking advantage of, or that these executive agencies aren't actually launching. And a lot of that came out in this budget conversation this year. What was also curious that I think our listeners need to understand is the government, for better or for worse, has created a host of entitlement programs. And if the budget continues to have the projections that it has had, we're going to have to start cutting into those entitlements in some pretty severe ways, which for us as conservatives who believe in limited government, who believe that the government's role is not to be involved in a lot of the things that they get involved in, that can be a win. But what we have to have vision for is how we can start to provide those services through the institutions in society that are supposed to be taking care of us. So charities, families, businesses, we're all going to have to step up and start to show to our colleagues and to our neighbors and to our coworkers that it doesn't have to be the government alone who solves these problems, because we're coming to a point now where the government's not going to be able, the state government's not going to be able to afford to even attempt to solve problems that they never should have solved before. And so I think I'm actually kind of excited and encouraged, because we are hitting this point where we're going to have to choose. And we could, if we are prepared and positioned well, we could lead Colorado out of the direction it's been going in and into a direction of freedom and a proper role of government. And so I'm excited about that.
Well, and I appreciate that, because Stephanie, what you had mentioned about people actually logging in and finding, you know, if you happen to have moved, there's like money that you may have missed or taxes that have come back or something like that. My husband and I, interesting enough, we actually did the same thing. We logged in and there was around $2,000 that we claimed back. And that's huge. I mean, that was part of rent. That was part of you know, money to put our food on our table and everything like that. So with the hard times, I think it's really important for people to understand that there is still some money out there. Definitely log into that website. And I will try to find that website and put it on the chat here. So thank you so much for that. So I'm actually just going to let this be more of a free-for-all now, you guys. Mm-hmm. Really what I would like to hear is your thoughts on this most egregious, these bills that have came through, and what your thought process is. I, you know, Representative Scott Bottoms ended up touching on it. But what are your guys' thoughts on this? And I've already had people call me as their former vice chair and say, look, I'm leaving Colorado. I cannot have my children live in a space like this. So let me talk to you guys about that. What are your guys' thoughts?
Sure. Do you have thoughts just jumping out your mouth right now, Representative Bottoms? Do you want to speak? Because I can wait right behind you.
Okay, so this is, I do think there is a positive and a negative. The negative is obvious to everybody. I'm making a lot of phone calls and talking to a lot of people, and they're all saying the same thing. I haven't come across anybody that is pleased with what's going on with our state house right now. And statistically, you can look, it's the confidence in the leadership of Colorado is as low as it's ever been in the history of Colorado. And so you put those things together, and that's very discouraging. People are moving. I just had my second son just had their first child, and they're already thinking about this. It's still a baby, and they're thinking, do we stay in Colorado with this? Do we continue? Do we put our kids in the public schools with all the stuff that's going on? And I can't blame people for wanting to leave, but at the same time, I think if everybody leaves, what hope do we have? Right? There has to be this mindset, and this is my attitude toward this is I'm going to stay and do the best I can to make Colorado what it used to be. We what it used to be thought about, the mountains and the hiking, the skiing, all this stuff. That's not the questions I'm getting across the other states right now when I'm interacting and doing things. They're always wanting to know what is wrong with Colorado. What has happened to Colorado? This is not the Colorado we've always known. And so the negative is, yes, we are crashing as a state in almost every way. In crime is so high. Governor Polis got up this last State of the State in January and talked about how crime was down, and that's not true. That's a flat out lie. The reality is we are rising in almost every single crime statistic. We're rising to the top. Of the top, we're in the top five in almost every single crime category. The Federal Reserve just released this last week that now Colorado is the most expensive state per capita to live in. This is not
A
okay.
Gracie.
This is bad, right? But here is the, I guess the silver lining is the people of Colorado are starting to pay attention, and they haven't. It is very difficult to get what we do in that under that gold dome out to the people. It is very difficult because the media is against any kind of common sense, moral, conservative verbiage. They will stifle it. They intentionally stifle it. I've had two reporters tell me that, and I mean we already knew it, but so the good thing is people are starting to pay attention when one of us does something in the House or the Senate. And we send that out and we get it all over the place. People are starting to say, wait a second, there's a handful, it's not a lot, but there's a handful of people that are fighting and saying, this is not okay. This is not okay, and this must stop. And for the first time, well, since the 30 years I've been in Colorado, this is the first time I've ever seen this. And so that's kind of the good thing. I really do believe, and Mark and I are both, Senator Baisley and I are both running for governor, and there's two other people. I do believe that the next governor will be a Republican. I believe that very, very strongly because the people of Colorado are done with this stuff. And so that's the good thing. When you even have the left that is crying out, please rescue us from our own party, that means we can actually do something here.
Thank you. And I agree with you on that. Mark Beasley, do you want to go ahead, or Stephanie, whoever wants to take the next turn on this?
Yeah, I'll butt in front of Stephanie. No, I couldn't agree more with Representative Bottoms here, Scott, because yeah, if you look at the things that the bills that were passing and just the attitude of the Democrats, It is going to stir up the heads and hearts of the citizens that don't normally pay attention to we're unusual folks here on this podcast and people listening in that we pay attention to this all the time, and most people are going about their lives as they should, and government should be an afterthought, but instead it's being used as something to micromanage their lives. But when you look at the things that they're doing, the most egregious bill was probably the House Bill 1312 that Scott had mentioned earlier, and it's where you could lose custody of your child if you do not affirm their new gender identity or refer to them as the name that they've chosen, the new name that they've chosen. And in that, the original form of the bill, it said that very thing, that this would be an encouragement to the courts to determine custody of your child if you dead named them, as a new term for me, refer to them as the name that they were given at birth, or the gender they were given at birth, the sex they were given at birth. And that silliness was so over the top that it didn't even mention divorce proceedings. It didn't say during a divorce battle, custody battle. It just said you could lose custody. In other words, hey, if you don't affirm what we believe, that's very unnatural stuff here, then we will step in the state and assume control of the parenting of your children. When you go that far, and then with the most egregious gun bill, Senate Bill 002, 3, that I'm sure we'll talk about as well. When they go so far as to say, hey, every weapon, every firearm that has a reloadable magazine will be outlawed, and then in the final version, hey, you're going to have to take 12 hours of training, of safety training, in order to exercise your Second Amendment constitutional rights. After a while, people are starting to go, what is happening? And you can't blame them for packing up and moving to Florida, Texas, Tennessee, and so on. But boy, I'm with Scott. We have to stand and fight for our home, and it is always worthwhile. It's always worthwhile, and the reason I believe it's always worthwhile is because our nation was founded on the principles of natural law, or as the founders put it, the laws of nature and of nature's God. In other words, what is natural, what should appeal to everyone in their nature, in their human nature, if we continue to pursue that and make that appeal to the voters, then eventually they'll get out of their doldrums and say, oh yeah, that's what makes sense to me, rather than this very unnatural, shoehorned in approach to life, where the government is going to micromanage every aspect of us. And we find this out. You learn this in your first term in the legislature, Hope, where you come in with your ideas of what bills you want to pass, and you sit down with the attorneys. We call them the attorneys in the basement, who write our bills for us. And it turns out that there are no new ideas. You're going to change a law that exists, or you're going to retrofit your idea into an existing law. But of those 44, I think it is, volume set of Colorado's revised statute, they've already made a law about everything, and it's so inappropriate. I mean, the government should be managing very few things in our lives, but instead, of course, they're licensing and regulating so much that it just becomes overwhelming. I'm sure that there are a gazillion laws that are on the books now that are not being enforced because it's overwhelming even for the government, and we don't even have the funding to pay for the enforcement of all that. But anyway, that's the depressing side of it all. But the hope in all of it is that I think that we are not too far gone as a state. I think that we just need to run a perfect game to win the state back, but I think it is within reach. And I agree with Scott that this is we will have a Republican governor next time, because the people are shocked by what they're seeing. It's one of the laws that got passed, or one of the bills that got passed, and I assume will be signed into law, is going to put people like court employees in a position of having to decide whether to obey the federal law regarding
Wow.
illegal immigrants or the state law, and they cannot do both. And so that level of intrusion in just forcing unnatural society is just going to be too much. And the people have got to realize that this is not John F. Kennedy's Democrat Party anymore. This is a radical off the rails party that's being controlled by just a small group of very radical people who are very bold. I mean, the ones that are in the Senate that are the most radical are the most bold, and they just drive the agenda in the Senate. And I'm not sure how it goes in the House, but it's shocking to me. It's just how far they push it, how hard they push it, and then the rest will, for the most part, go along with it. So, but we've got to stand up. This is our country. This is our state, and it's not just worth saving. We have got to assert natural law, take this state back, and join the rest of the country that woke up last year.
Right. I agree with you totally. I think that a lot of people are definitely waking up more and more here in Colorado. And I definitely agree that there will be a Republican governor in 2026. Stephanie, do you have any insight on this as well?
Jumping off of the 1312 conversation, I think it's important for folks to know that the coercive control sections of the bill that spoke directly into parental custody were stripped from the legislation. It was deemed unpalatable. It was likely that the governor would veto if it was still in there. I'm not even sure, and the senator could speak more fully on this. I'm not even sure that it would have gotten out of the Senate as it was initially drafted because of the pushback of parent groups and others, not as you guys have mentioned, not only in the state, but around the world. That said, it's important, Hope, you mentioned you have friends who are looking at moving out because they don't want their kids stripped from them. And I completely appreciate that with a 15-month-old sitting in my back seat right now. But I would say that this is already happening to families, and it has been happening for some time, where schools, different authority figures, or spouses in custody battles will throw this out there, and the court will side with the parent who is transitioning, or they will strip custody from parents if both parents are unwilling to affirm their child's confusion. And so we have to understand that this is already going on, and we need to give support to those families who are suffering from this. I cannot even begin to imagine being the moms that I've talked to who have not seen their kids in over 2 years because the courts have removed them. I don't know how they're walking around, to be honest with you. So it's already here, it's already in practice, and you need to be aware of that. One of the things that 1312 hid in clever terminology is that what Senator Baisley was pointing to, the misgendering and the dead naming, that was defined in the first bill very clearly. But in the amended version, it is kind of tucked away in the language of the chosen name, and I believe it's something to the effect of what the person desires to be called. And that terminology is under what is known as CADA, the Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act. And it applies to places of public accommodation, housing, employment. So a lot of areas, public accommodations basically are defined as everything from nonprofits now to hotels to swimming pools. I mean, it spans the gamut. And so you could have another situation like the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, where someone comes in and wants to be called the gender that they were not, that they're biologically not. And if someone fails to do it because of the way this bill got amended, they might be able to bring that person, that landlord, that business owner up on charges for failing to properly gender them, even after one instance, because the protections that were in the first bill, so this is curious, the first bill was actually better on this point than the second bill, and those have all been stripped out. And so now it really leaves it open to the Code of Civil Rights Division deciding whether someone's identity, their gender identity, their gender expression has been discriminated against, even to the point of calling a boy a girl. It's curious, and it's really unfortunate, and I'm hopeful that, as Representative Bottoms pointed out, there will be lawsuits post-haste, and this whole provision, this whole section will be struck, but we'll have to see. And as anyone who has followed Jeff Phillips knows, his story is a decade plus in the making in order to provide protections. And so my hope is that that won't be the case here, that it will be struck down quickly on prior precedent. But if not, we're going to be in this for the long haul. In terms of other areas, like our unalienable right to self-defense, you know, Senate Bill 3 was given a lot of traction. It was given a lot of airtime, and rightly so, because it excluded huge amount of the market from being purchasable without going through hoops and hoops that the sheriff is saying, we can't provide this. It might be years before we can give the necessary permission for folks to be able to purchase a weapon. And that's on top of other bills that have passed over the last couple of years related to age requirements. You have to be 21, you have to buy a weapon, to buy ammunition, you have to wait 3 days. I mean, it's just built out such that it's unlikely, I believe, that people who firearms will be able to continue to sell them. Sorry, Mark. And I also think that it's going to become more and more difficult to own them. I had a conversation with a member in the House Democrat caucus who did say that he had considered putting forth a bill that would have required registration if people owned over a certain number of firearms, and so you would have had to file with the state. He didn't put that forward this year, but I don't doubt that if that's in their mind, it won't come in the years soon, hence. So there's a lot to the core working of our culture, the core working of as I mentioned, what it means to be a Coloradan, that has been disassembled, really, by
right.
the legislature. When we're talking about property rights, when you're talking about the ability to engage freely in business, I mean, we had big bills that spoke about labeling, you know, so now all gas stoves are going to have a label that's front and center that says this needs to be exhausted to the exterior, your gas stove, because, you know, we have to tell people these things. And it was pointed out by our colleague, Representative DeGraff, that that's not even necessary to
right.
do these this exhaust, but we're now going to force every gas stove maker to slap a label on it that has to be a certain type. And there was yep. a bill related to gas stations and having labels. Now that bill died, I understand it, in the Senate, but that particular bill was going to require stickers to be put on every single gas pump along with other things. And it got down to the nitty gritty of what color the sticker had to be, what color the ink had to be, what size the font had to be. I mean, we're getting into the micromanaging to the nth degree. And that's
right.
what we see day in and day out. And I hope people will stand and fight. I hope they will push back. I hope they'll understand that this battle is the same. Even in quote-unquote red states, we're seeing people that are claiming to be Republican putting forward similar legislation. And so the fight is everywhere. You just have to know where you're called to fight, stand in and seek to defend that which is good and true and beautiful.
And I certainly appreciate that, because again, I guess that's where we can kind of end this segment. The positiveness is actually we are coming into an election, and I do have my other two guests that are going to be coming on here shortly. We're coming into an election. So if you guys could give me your 30-second elevator ride of what is the positive that we see, what is the hope here in Colorado for 2026? We'll start with Scott Bottoms.
Yes, again, the hope is hope, that the people are waking up and There are some basic things that have always defined our country. And we've been through some very difficult times in our history during the 60s and 70s as soldiers were coming back from Vietnam. That's not a very proud time in our history. During the early parts of the civil rights movement, where people were attacking, those are not good times. But it's always amazing to me how this country rises out of these kind of things. And we're already seeing this on the national level. So I don't think that I'm making this up or being too naive. At the national level and across most of the states, the people are pushing back and saying, we're not going to keep doing this. This we will rebuild, our country. The Trump thing, make America great again. I don't think enough people focus on the again. That we are a great country, amazing country. And I think Colorado is an amazing state. I absolutely love Colorado. I love living in Colorado. I think it's the most beautiful place in the United States. We've marred it with some of our stuff recently. We've marred it with some of our ugliness. But I think the people are rising up and they're saying, no, we're gonna fight this and we're gonna beat this back. And we're gonna turn Colorado again with our eyes set upon the amazingness of who we are.
Thank you, Senator Baisley.
Sure, thank you, Hope. It's a joy to be on your show here with you, and so thanks for inviting us. My hope is in the people themselves, and they've been shocked into some reality, including schools and especially schools, with the kind of mixed blessing and curse of COVID that caused them to have to pay more attention instead of just handing their kids over for 8 hours a day and realizing that there is so much of the evil that comes on our society, comes on to Colorado, on the people and on the kids, is because of the schools. They leverage that, having custody of our kids for several hours every day. When they're away from their parents. And if you look at just how much of the law that their agenda represents is focused on the schools, it's immense. It's a large percentage of what they're doing. So that's something that I think the people have awakened. The enrollment is down, and it continues to go down as the population grows and the enrollment goes down. So it's reflective of that. So yeah, it's a slow waking up, I think, but more than anything else, we're founded on the laws of nature and of nature's God, and people will realize that the folks that are in control are in rebellion against that law. And so when they realize that, even if just kind of a visceral realization, then they're ready to no longer have a single party rule. And we're going to have to win this governor's race. And then within the next couple of years, we need to win back the majority in the House and the majority in the Senate. Because if we have one of the three, if we have the majority in the House or the majority in the Senate or the governor's office, then we can stop the crazy stuff from coming through. But to reverse all that, we need all three again. And it wasn't that long ago that we had that on the Republican side. And I think about how if those folks who had all three, 15 years ago, if they realized where we were going to go, they would have put up a whole lot more guards than we have. The one big thing that they put into place back then was Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. We need, when we regain control, we need to reverse all the damage that's been done over the past 10 years and start putting up more guards to limit government like Tabor did. So anyway, yeah, I share Scott's hope, and let's just never relent. It's an eternal battle, and so that's what we're in, and we have to look at it that way. So thank you for the time, Hope.
Appreciate it. You're welcome. Stephanie, if you give me your 30-second positive, what do you see for the future 2026?
My hope is always in Jesus' hope. So I will say that I look to the story of Nehemiah and the reality that a civilization can be completely destitute and crumbled, and yet within a very short period of time, it can rise from the ashes. And we see that in the book of Nehemiah, 66 days it took them to rebuild the walls after they put their mind to it. It was years in the making, but once they put their mind to it and they had a plan and they worked together and they each worked at their own section, not fighting for other people's sections, recognizing that everyone has a role to play and everyone's role is important for the whole wall to go up. Once that was understood and people were given the tools and fought together, not meaning with each other against the enemy, not with each other against each other, then you saw a civilization begin to revive. And that is my hope. My hope is that what has taken decades to destroy, we can rebuild in quick succession, so long as we are all of the same accord. So that is my prayer and that is my hope.
Oh, thank you so much, Stephanie. I certainly appreciate you three being on with me. We're going to say goodbye to Representative Luck, Representative Bottoms, and Senator Baisley. Thank you so much for coming on today and giving us your guys' take on the 2025 General Assembly and your hope for the future. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, friends.
Thanks, Hope.
Thanks, guys. And now I believe we have Representative Brandy Bradley and Ian Escalante. If we can go ahead and bring up Ian. Hey, Ian.
How's it going?
Good. How are you? And Representative Bradley, are you still on the phone there?
I'm still here.
Hey, thank you so much for having or coming on. I'm going to start off with Representative Bradley, I know that you had a conflict, but I wanted to get your take. I know you have been a huge fighter for the children and the parental rights, and I want to get you your take on all of this. And then, Ian, we will bring you in on the Second Amendment here shortly. Just bear with me 1 second. Representative Bradley.
Yes, I hope. Thanks so much for having us on. You know, I was listening to the three people that you just had on. Obviously, couldn't have fought a better fight with those guys and our corner. It's awful. And I think the people of Colorado need to understand that bill 1312 came back worse. It seems like it didn't because they removed coercive control and the custodial battles. But when they added all of the chosen name lingo into gender identity or gender expression without any safeguards or any real guardrails, you know, public schools, private schools, businesses, any public accommodations are going to be, I think it's going to be suable. And the courts are going to be the ones deciding about what a chosen name is under the guise of gender expression. We're going to be in a real bad situation in the state of Colorado. So, you know, just because they took out the coercive control doesn't mean this isn't bad. And I'll add that, you know, they added into the birth certificates that you can change your sexual identification. You can also change it on your driver's license if you're not here in this country legally. And we already know that you can change it, your name, if you're a felon. And so as of the bill last year, this is a public safety crisis. This is a healthcare crisis. If a felon can legally change their name and now they can change their sexual identification, and we're saying that you're not going to have to jump through 8 different hoops to own a gun. I mean, just on the classification of owning a gun, how are the FFLs even going to be able to background check? It's like they're going to try to put these people out of business. And I'm sure Ian can explain that a little bit more. But from a healthcare standpoint, you hire a sexual offender, a felon, that has now been able to change their sexual identity because they've changed their name. I mean, this is disgraceful and disgusting and shameful. And if our governor signs these two bills into law, I have no words for him. I hope he is done ever being able to hold the title.
I agree with you, Brandy. I totally agree with you. Ian, let's get your input on the Second Amendment and what has happened here in Colorado. What happened?
Well, I can tell you what happened is we are under attack. We've been under attack, unfortunately, for over a decade. And it's been a full frontal attack, a siege, one might say, from all sides. They started off 20 years ago with the radical environmental stuff. They then started moving into civil unions and gay marriage, and that was really the first step that we saw. They started off there. That was the beginning of what we're now seeing with 1312 and the total abolition of parental rights and the radical sex education garbage that folks like Brandy and Stephanie and Mark Baisley and Scott Bottoms have been stalwart warriors fighting against. And then they said, you know what, we're going to come for the guns as well. And they started by passing a magazine ban in 2013. And unfortunately, ever since then, they've been off to the races. They have passed red flag gun confiscation. They've tried on multiple occasions to ban all semi-autos. They tried it again this year. But what they did this year is they took a page out of Washington State's playbook, where instead of banning the guns outright, they're going to create administrative hoops that are almost impossible to jump through, which in practice will become a de facto administrative ban. On top of that, it's going to put gun shops out of business. I'm already talking to folks who they're saying their sales are down 80% from what they were
Wow.
last year because they've decided to tax guns and ammo now. And then in addition to that, they're now going to make it to where you have to get a permission slip, and you have to pass a literacy test, and you have to take an anti-gun indoctrination course now to purchase a semi-auto rifle, or and some of the most commonly sold and used firearms in America for self-defense. These are not assault weapons. These are not whatever they try to make them out to be. They are the most common home defense weapons. I live in Denver and I own an AR-15 because I'm concerned about a Venezuelan gang kicking in my door.
Right.
And
So
now what they're doing is that.
let me ask you, because we only have a few more minutes left, guys, and I'm so sorry. Let me ask you, Ian, what is Rocky Mountain Gun Owners doing on SB 25003? Where are we standing, and what can we do to assist you? I hear you guys are getting a petition going. Is that correct? And delivering it to somebody?
So we're doing a multifaceted approach, and Senate Bill 3 is not the only gun bill that we had to deal with this year. I understand we're short on time, but we are looking right now. We're getting ready and prepared to file lawsuits against some of these insane measures that were passed. One of them being the House Bill 1225, which I've called the Second Amendment Gag Act, which says that you can't even open the door while open carrying a firearm, because if it's a political canvasser, they can sue you for everything that you own and claim that you intimidated them. As far as Senate Bill 3, they purposely took a God-given, constitutionally protected right and turned it into a licensed, paid-for government privilege that flies in the face of our Constitution, that flies in the face of natural rights, that flies in the face of the laws of nature that Senator Baisley just talked about. So what we're doing right now is we're sitting down with our legal team and we're looking to prepare a lawsuit against Senate Bill 3. It's a little bit more difficult because a outright ban is easier to challenge in court on its face. A licensing scheme with a severability clause is a little bit more difficult, but we're still committed to doing everything we can to put together a plan to destroy this in court. Secondly, what we're doing is we're preparing for 2026. We are going to be recruiting candidates. We are going to be recruiting solid conservative warriors. Having an R next to your name is not enough. As we saw, I've saw some of the worst behavior from Republicans I've ever seen in any legislature this session. So we're going to make sure that we're not just kicking out the people who the communists who want to destroy our rights and destroy us, we're going to replace them with fire-breathing dragons for freedom. And finally, we are urging President Trump's Department of Justice to immediately take action and start investigating Jared Polis. Start investigating the people here, because at the end of the day, yes, we do need to kick these people out. And asking for federal intervention does not excuse us for sitting back and doing nothing. But the damage is going to be done by the time it's time for us to vote again. And we cannot allow people to get away with it. So we must make this happen. So if you have not, go to rmgo.org/Bondi, B-O-N-D-I. Sign your petition. We're going to be delivering those in D.C. at the end of next month.
Thanks so much, Ian. And Brandy, I'm going to give you 30 seconds. 30 seconds, because then in about a minute we have to conclude. 30 seconds. Give me your 30-second spiel for 2026. What do you see positive?
Oh, I see a lot positive. I mean, the call to action was to get the word outside the building. We've done that. Ian's done that. You've done that. I've done that. We are a crew of accidental activists, like Aaron Lee will say. We will be touring the state, and we will keep everyone posted on social media. There's a reason we're all going viral, because the people are fed up, and we're not going to make sure the word stays within the Golden Dome. We are going to spread it like wildfire, and I am very hopeful about that.
Well, thank you, you guys. I appreciate your hard work, your fight, your perseverance, and just keep up the fight. Thank you again, you guys. Thanks, Brandy. Thanks, Ian. You guys have a wonderful day. And with that, you guys, we are concluding the Chuck and Julie Show. Chuck and Julie will be on Monday. And have a wonderful, wonderful Friday. Take care, everybody.